You've got mail. This is Andy and John Talk Telecom with Andy Netzel and John Rewey.
All right, well, hey, welcome. You are now logged on to Andy and John Talk Telecom. I am Andy Netzel.
I'm John Rewey.
Hey, John, I hope you are doing well. It is hot and humid down here in Houston.
Yeah, I mean, it's hot as blazes here, and we're down to one day of watering, so trying to keep the grass alive in the yard and, you know, just spend a lot more time indoors than usual, trying to stay cool.
Yeah. You know what else is hot? The fight to open up the 12 gigahertz spectrum for 5G.
Bam! Talk about a segue, and you are not lying. I know. It is a knockdown, drag-out battle.
It is. You know, there are incumbents who have, you know, mainly, you know, SpaceX, I believe, is one of them, and some GPS possible organizations. But there are incumbents who are fighting strongly against opening up the 12 gigahertz spectrum for use by 5G companies or companies providing 5G services. And we've talked about the 5G for 12 gigahertz coalition before. It consists of almost 40 public interest groups, trade associations, companies, you know, people you've probably heard of before, like Resound Networks, Dish, World Wireless Association, Starry. So they're all proponents for opening up this 12 gigahertz spectrum. And so what did we do? We got a special guest to talk about exactly that.
Man, who better to talk about this than someone who's been in the trenches in the FCC, former FCC commissioner, Mike Riley.
Yeah, Mike Riley, former FCC commissioner, took office in November of 2013 and left in 2020. So a good, you know, just over 6 years of service in the FCC. So very knowledgeable. And who better to talk about the inner workings of the FCC and how the government auctions off spectrum than someone who was there.
That's right. So looking forward to this conversation with Michael Riley.
Ready to get into it?
Let's do it.
All right, hey everybody, welcome back to Andy and John Talk Telecom. On the line, more or less with us, is Mike O'Reilly, former FCC commissioner. Mike, good morning, how are you?
Doing well, how about yourself? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely, doing well. Thanks for coming on. And, you know, like I said, Mike was a FCC commissioner from, I believe, 2013 to 2020. So a six and a half, seven year stint as an FCC commissioner. So you've been plugged in with a lot that's been going on over the past decade in telecom. And one of the things that John and I have talked a lot about in the past and done a couple interviews with people from the coalition is the 5G for 12 gigahertz coalition, which is a group of almost 30 either interest groups, companies, et cetera, that are looking to and lobbying the FCC to open up 500 megahertz of capability for two-way 5G use. So I'll let John had a good specific question, and I'll let John kick it off.
Yeah, well, Mike, thanks so much for joining us. Really excited to kind of hear your take. You know, we try on the podcast to really kind of follow the trends and stay ahead of where things are going. And, you know, this really is one of the most exciting times in telecom, I think, for a variety of reasons, whether it's, you know, rural broadband or really building out 5G to what it needs to be for us. So I'm just kind of curious, with your really unique background at the FCC, what are some of the big points of evolution that you've seen, you know, in the past 10 years that stand out to you and that kind of lead us to this moment now where we're talking about how to really unleash the power of 5G.
Well, look, I appreciate the conversation. I'm not a member of the coalition, but I lend my support to the discussion because I think it's really critical that we get more spectrum for 5G, particularly in the mid bands. I spent a good amount of time at the FCC working to get deals on the high bands, and then I switched and pivoted to the mid bands. Worked really hard on 3.45 and worked hard on CBRS and the C-band, and that's all great. And I worked, you know, we got those all out of the marketplace, wonderful, but it's not enough. we need more. And the pipeline's relatively empty. There's not a lot of different options out there. When I looked and I scanned around and say, what's the future look like? Either the 12 gigahertz, 12.2 to 12.7 make an awful lot of good sense. You don't have any federal entities that are there, which usually are the main obstacles to clearing and getting new opportunities. So you have a relatively clear band. And then it's a fight over incumbents and how do we work through those issues and can you share the band? So I'm really excited what you can do there because to your original question, it's what's absolutely necessary to get to that transition from 4G to 5G to 6G. You absolutely need more contiguous blocks of spectrum to make this happen. And this is a premier band for this purpose. The fight over sharing is something I think can be worked through. And then you get to how do you deal with the licenses?
Why is it so critical right now? I mean, I think we've talked about it, but why is 5G so critical? Why is opening up this additional spectrum critical? I mean, what are the implications for industry, for national security? I mean, the whole spectrum there. No pun intended.
Sure, no, absolutely. Look, I'm excited about 5G and where it's going. And people say, oh, it's been a dud. And the only good G is an even G. And that's not necessarily true. I think 5G is going to be, really developed nicely. The verticals are just coming online with all the other market segments that have been kind of, working through the approval process and working through the standardization process. And now we're going to come online. So things like automotive and manufacturing, all these other things that were kind of in their own silo that telecom would service are not going to be part of the ecosystem. And so that's really, 5G changes the equation. It's not something that's just part of the business or part of the personal experience. It's interwoven into the whole operations of a business or of your personal household. So I'm really excited on where we're going with 5G, but we do need more spectrum to make that happen. Mid-band, what we've made available just isn't enough. And we're going to need more as we get to 6G, which will play off of the 5G band. So it's really critical that we get more into the marketplace. People say, oh, well, we're going to look at lower 3 gigahertz. And I'm like, hey, look at that. It's great. I got the 100 out of the lower 3 gigahertz. I think there's still another 100 or 150 to have, for both licensed and unlicensed or some kind of CBRS model. But that's years away. And then all the other bands that people talk about are, pipe dreams right now. They're like, maybe we could use something over here. This is something, 12 gigahertz is something that we can make happen in a relatively short amount of time period without federal government agencies' involvement. That's a wonderful outcome.
Yeah, definitely makes it a little bit easier when, you don't have to deal with the federal government. No offense for your former posting there. But do you think we put the cart before the horse a little bit? Like 5G was talked a lot about, when it was first coming to fruition, automated, you talk about the automotive industry and, self-driving cars, and we're going to have this and have that. And, those are all definite potential, things we're going to have, and I don't know if the FCC plays any part in this kind of marketing, but do you think just, we as a whole kind of put the cart before the horse and started not promising, but talking a little bit too much about things that were, too far out in the future?
Yeah, we're all guilty of hyping it up. And I gave a speech, but I'm guilty of that. Early on, we were giving speeches about remote surgery and connected cars, as you mentioned. Things, I'm not comfortable, and I don't think I'll be comfortable in my lifetime having someone do remote surgery, maybe down the road. But that's probably some years away. What we've seen, though, is 5G has turned into some really good opportunities on the manufacturing side, on mining side. So many different businesses are taking advantage. Operations, you're getting efficiencies you've not had before from the new technology. So if you look into smaller cases or more practical uses, it's actually very beneficial. You think about the pie in the sky Jetsons kind of scenarios, we're probably, we probably overhype those and we live the penalties for that, but that's okay. And as long as it develops and we work through some of the verticals I mentioned, I think we're getting in a much better place.
Yeah, you got to dream at some point, right?
It was part of my old job. It's part of everyone, whoever's a technologist in this space, it's part of where you think the things might go. And then sometimes you're right and sometimes you're wrong.
Well, if we're not sending those ideas and shooting for the moon, as they say, how are we going to get the impetus for progress? So I think that's all great. I mean, we have to, that's kind of the history of America, right? Is being able to have that vision of the future that we're establishing out there and having people chase down. So yeah, it's super exciting. I think to kind of understand the need for more spectrum for those that might not be as in the nitty gritty details of it, how does I think the sake of comparison maybe is a way to kind of look at that. How do we compare to, let's say, other developing country, developed countries, or what is a good comparison to kind of say we're behind or we're at this level comparatively?
You know, if you look at mid-band allocations for 5G, we're behind the rest of the world, and we may stay there if we don't do, you know, take action and put more spectrum into the pipeline. If you compare us to where we are, where China is able to, you know, and China has a different approach, right? The government can do whatever it wants and runs over any kind of private industry that it sees in its way. And it's allocated much more spectrum in this space. You even see Europe, which is kind of a lagger in wireless industry. They're actually allocating more spectrum for this purpose. And you see this in other parts that, you know, other parts of Western Europe and Eastern Europe that are really moving forward with much more opportunities and much more spectrum bands than we are in the United States. And C-band certainly helped bring our portfolio forward, but it's still lacking. And 3.45 is still not enough for these purposes. It actually brings us kind of on par because 5G is going to, you know, incorporate and require much more capacity, much more, you know, broader bands, more contiguous bands, and in blocks, and you're going to put these things together to provide the whole offering to consumers. And that's happening now, but it's still, you know, and having the number of players that can do this is small right now because of the blocks that we've made available. So we have a way to go domestically to be able to compete internationally. We risk, you know, our leadership in wireless industry, which has been, you know, for a number of decades, and people say, oh, 3G was led by Europeans. And I disagree with that analysis. We risk putting 5G and 6G, which is already being worked on by many parties. We risk doing that if we don't move forward on sound spectrum policy, like 12 gigahertz.
So we don't want to lose that, you know, international, that world leadership in the wireless market. What practically needs to, you know, what are the steps to take, right? You know, could it happen tomorrow where, you know, somebody in government signs a piece of paper and it's going to go out to auction next month? What are the practical, you know, operational type steps that need to happen to get to where we want to open up this 12G band?
Well, I wish it was like that, right? Every, you know, just identifying, just working through the procedures, making something is still a couple, you know, a year and a half away. It takes so long to, once the band's been agreed upon, identified, signed off, as you mentioned, by the regulating, by the FCC saying, okay, we're making this available, and they go through the rigmarole, and then they set the auction date. You're still, you know, 18 months away from actually making, you know, licenses available, and that's at the best scenario. They people say, oh, you can walk and chew gum at the same time, and that actually hasn't been the strong suit of the FCC. They can do one or the other, and they want to finish their walk or finish their gum before they start something new. So they want to finish the 2.5 gigahertz auction, which is going on right now, before they will tackle anything new. And that's just, you know, how the process works. And so it's really important to kind of, you know, end some of the uncertainty on the band itself. And the regulators, FCC in this case, can decide to move forward and say, this is, you know, identified. We can work through the sharing issues between the incumbents and new terrestrial uses and make it available for 5G purposes and other mobile and terrestrial uses. We can do that, and then you can work through the procedures of the, you know, and make it available for auction in the coming months, or whatever the structure may be that the commission decides on.
So procedurally, there's that piece that you just talked about within the FCC, but additionally, there's the incumbents there. What do you think are the prospects? What are a little bit of the roadblocks to overcoming that part of it?
Yeah, most of the incumbents in the band are actually supportive of this effort, and they believe that there's value in having terrestrial use. I mean, the biggest user by far is Dish, and they're supportive of this effort and leading the coalition, or part of the coalition, for this purpose. So that's exciting. That's unusual. There's definitely a couple entities that are not supportive, you know, the biggest being SpaceX. They've led, you know, kind of the opposition. They think there's some harmful interference here. And then it's a fight for the regulators, particularly the engineers, to go through the projections, the science, the engineering, and determine who's right. The record's kind of full of enough material now, I think, for the commission to make a decision. You have an independent study put forward by the coalition, and then you have a couple, what I would consider kind of self-serving, paper-thin findings by some of the incumbents. And then that's the job of the regulators to see through that process and figure out what the math will get them and how far they'll go. The good part about OET at the FCC is it's highly respected. They don't tend to they're generally cautious and conservative. So if they say that it can happen and they're supportive of it, at some point, hopefully they'll make that decision. If that occurs, you can take that to the bank.
Is OET, and I might figure into what I was going to ask is, you know, how as is your background as an engineer?
No, I'm a policymaker. You know, I'm not an engineer by nature. There are very few at the commission that are engineers, actually.
Yeah, and so that's kind of what I was going to ask. If your background isn't in engineering, is OET part of a group that works for FCC that is full of engineers? Like, who do you turn to, without an engineering background to be like, all right, what is BS here? What is actual, facts that are found and bound in science?
No, the Office of Engineering and Technology is exactly for that purpose. And they are full of engineers. They have, a handful of lawyers and others too. But they really work through the math, and they have for my time at the commission and the 20 years on Capitol Hill that I spent working on policy. I would turn to OET and the FCC for expert analysis and technical advice and things of that nature. So they are one of the crown jewels of the FCC, and respected both domestically and internationally. They're full of engineers that kind of go through the math, and they go, we can do this, we can do that, we can't do this. It won't get you there. And if you look at an example, I've cited this in the past. I want to do more things on 6 gigahertz. I thought we could do some, and they were like, we're not quite there yet. We don't think the math could justify some of the things that I wanted to do at the time. And they're still working through that now. They're still working through those very important issues. The low power indoor can be increased, and dealing with the wearable issues and the very low power issues can be addressed. So there's some pieces they're still working on from 6 gigahertz that I did and worked on years ago. That they weren't ready on, and they cautiously said, we're going to have to wait on this for more analysis. And that's what they're working on now. Hopefully you can see this, they'll see the math on this is pretty clear and can move forward and say that it can be shared, and then they can move forward to figure out, the licensing regime.
How much during your time, was spent on wireless versus, broadband, right? We have a huge federal large amount of federal funds going into broadband, bridging that digital divide. What kind of, during your time, was your attention more spent on wireless, on broadband? Do you think it was pretty equal?
It's probably, if you would break it down, it's, a third on wireless, a third on broadband, and then a third on a lot of, I won't call them miscellaneous issues, very important subject matters, things that can fall in different buckets, but broadcasting issues and proceed, a lot of things that the commission does, the blocking and tackling that it, there's a lot of items that come out that you won't spend any time on because they're procedural, but I had to read through those and vote on all them. But a third of my time was wireless, and a third is broadband, quite clearly.
The current FCC chair has, mentioned the potential for raising the benchmark for broadband from 25.3 up to something more than that. That 25.3, I believe, was established while you were there at the FCC, and maybe 5-6 years ago when it was that was adequate, right? That was a good benchmark. Would you be in favor of raising that minimum broadband benchmark, or do you think 25.3 is still good, considering there's a lot of rural areas in the country that don't even have access at all, right? They have 0-0. So 25.3 is going to look attractive to those markets.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, I don't think we should stop at any speeds, and I'm not for locking in lower speed tiers. When I got to the commission, we were at 4.1. So then you think about that, right? So then there are a lot of 10.1s was the conversation, and 25.3, great. I'm supportive of going to higher speeds. I want everyone to have the opportunities and the benefits to go with that, but I don't want to leave anyone behind. And that's every time that we do raise the benchmark, we do leave people behind. Those areas get left, and everyone rushes to the easier to serve areas. Urban markets are going to, most of them already have the capability. The suburban markets or the edges of rural markets are those areas where people will rush the dollars in because it's easy to upgrade, easier to upgrade, and it's more profitable to upgrade. The rural markets or those that don't have service today will be left behind again. They didn't have 4.1, they didn't have 10.1, they didn't have 25.3, and if it's 100 and whatever, it doesn't matter what the speed is, we should try and figure out how to get everybody. And that was some of the purpose of all the dollars going in and using 25.3 as the benchmark for that purpose by Congress, saying here's where we're going to try and target these people who don't have service today with all of these dollars. I mean, you're talking about 10 years worth of FCC funding being crunched down into a 2-4 year spend window. So they're really trying to get everybody up to that level. The second part of this is, you know, it's one thing to have like an aspirational or benchmark, what do you call it? If that was the goal of the commission and saying, here, we're going to peg it at this point for our use, that's one thing. It does have some qualifications to the whole debate on net neutrality. By raising the rates, you then show there's a lot of problems in America, and therefore it triggers other parts of the statute and actually has more regulatory kicks to it. So if it was one thing on its own, that'd be a way to consider it. Because it has other pieces to it, including people being left behind and other regulatory purposes, I don't think it's a clean examination.
Yeah, that's a great point that I don't think anybody we've talked to before has brought up, especially the being left behind, right? If I'm a public company and, you know, I'm beholden to my shareholders and I need to show a profit, right? Like you said, I'm going to go to the suburban markets where it's easier to upgrade. And once again, the rural markets are going to be left behind. So maybe a better game plan is to let this, you know, play out, bridge that digital divide as much as we can at 25.3 and then look at, you know, raising any sort of benchmark. You know, it's that way, you know.
That was certainly my viewpoint at the commission. I wanted to get everybody, you know, who wants broadband to a certain level. If you've got zero, and I did hearing, you know, last year on this, it testified in both the House and Senate and talked about the speeds, and, you know, talked to a member from Alaska in the Senate, and they had people, many people who had zero, and people, 25.3 is old and it needs to be upgraded. If you have zero, you'd be happy to have 25.3. And yeah. I don't want to stop at 25.3. I want you to get, you know, anywhere you want to go, but getting to 25.3 requires a lot of effort and a lot of work and money to make that happen.
Sure.
Right. In the last, whatever period of time, I guess we kind of talked about terrestrial broadband and then wireless use. We're talking about 5G specifically. There's been a lot of sort of aggregation or over the last 10 years or so where a lot of the different stakeholders, providers, would be the wireless, telco, cable TV, pure fiber plays, a lot of them are kind of, and then also fixed wireless, a lot of them are kind of converging and beginning to really be a lot of different technologies that are serving the same customer. When I lived in rural America, I used a hotspot. So I was a Verizon and an AT&T customer because I had a phone and a hotspot. And so how does that sort of change, or does it change the way the FCC looks at really the ultimate goal, which is getting data coverage to Americans with the different technologies and different ways of doing that and the different companies that might have been kind of siloed over a phone company, over a cable company, or a wireless company, as they all kind of converge and go after the same dollars and same customers?
Well, look, it shouldn't matter and it doesn't matter to the consumers and the technology that is used to get them the broadband that they so desperately want. So people don't tend to care if it's, you know, fixed wireless or fiber, or, you know, as long as they can get to the speed, you know, get to the technology and the speeds that they want. They don't really care about the technology. And the good part about, you know, what we've been able to do in the last probably, you know, 7-8 years is technology has merged. Certainly there's benefits to fiber. I'm not going to suggest otherwise, but for most purposes, fixed wireless or even 5G, you know, mobile use can serve all of the consumers' needs for their broadband experience. And so the convergence, you know, used to be such a differentiation between the two. And that is, you know, that has evaporated to most efficiently. And now when you talk about 5G, you really can have a great wireless experience, a great broadband experience over the technology. And it should be that policy shouldn't dictate one way or the other. And that's kind of why I'm troubled by where we are with the big money that's coming out of NTIA at Department of Commerce. They've picked fiber and said, we're going to put our foot down and say, this is the best place. Everybody else gets, you know, to the farther down the ladder in terms of consideration, in terms of getting funding. And I think that's a mistake because we're going to need wireless. We're going to need the spectrum coming from 12 gigahertz to make that happen. If there's one problem with wireless today, it's the ability to have more spectrum to feed the pipeline, to feed the capacity and the needs of consumers. There's one thing holding it back. The technology's there, the speeds are there, the standards are there, the devices are there, everything's there, but you're going to have to keep feeding spectrum to make that happen.
Yeah, it's really interesting, especially with the RDOF project where, you know, some of the winners were talking about doing fixed wireless and offering gigabit over fixed wireless. And there's a lot of controversy around, well, can you really do that? And yet we see examples constantly of, here's another test where we just did this. And it does seem a little bit short-sighted to say, nope, fiber or nothing, when there may be different and much more efficient ways to actually get the job done.
Yeah, especially in the terrain that is the United States, right? We have, you know, big mountains in many places and you know, very rural parts of America that make it hard to stretch fiber. I love fiber. I'm not trying to denigrate it, but we got to be mindful that it's not the right choice for every place. And in certain other places, consumers want the mobility. They like the option that they have. And so there's both those kind of features working at it. And we shouldn't, you know, pick one technology or another. That's something I worked really hard, tech neutrality. I'm working on a paper on that point because it really shouldn't be, the government shouldn't be picking winners and losers. I remember, and, you know, some kind of a couple seconds on this. I remember when we were wiring all the schools, this is in the late 90s. I ever had to wire schools and they take a Saturday and everyone would dig holes in their school, local elementary school. And they'd have these pizza parties to wire up the school. And then within like 3 years, they ripped out all the wire, yet another pizza party, and they put up a lot of hotspots or wireless networks, you know, to make it happen. A lot of Wi-Fi went in. And since then, it's only upgraded. You needed fewer and fewer sites. But, you know, picking one technology has a detrimental effect long term.
Yeah, there's definitely not a one size kind of fits all solution. And that's why we have, you know, varying types of technologies. You mentioned the 12G again. Once that is approved and you talked about the 18-month kind of timeline, what is there a band that's kind of targeted as next, or, you know, what other spectrum out there is feasible? And I don't want to call low hanging fruit, but might be the next step after 12G.
Yeah. I mean, 12 gigahertz is by far and away the easiest and the most, you know, timely. After that, I look at what Congress has done on lower 3 gigahertz, 3.1 to 3.45. I think that's where, you have a lot of DoD radar systems that are going to have to be worked around or moved in some capacity, you know, some situation. So that is probably the next prime location. And then you have a lot of other bands that people talk about that make sense in one form or another, you know, 7, 8. People talk about, you know, high bands being added to the picture, trying to, you know, resolve 37 for unlicensed. So there's a lot of other things that people, you know, kind of talk about, but those are years away. And that's why it makes, you know, that's what one made it so easy for me to pick 12 and say, this is something that can happen in a short amount of time that actually, you know, can work through the sharing issues, that the science is there and can prove it. And we need to move forward rather than waiting forever. Because there aren't other other spectrum bands to pick and say, oh, we'll just use this one, no big deal. There aren't a lot of good other ones. Lower three is great, but that's going to be a good fight because you have that in statutory language that's going to be, you know, 2024, maybe bleeding in 2025, could take into 2026. I mean, if you're now talking about 2026, that's 3.5 years away. That's a problem for the United States if we just sit and wait. And that's why 12 gigahertz makes all the sense in the world.
Yeah, and you mentioned, you know, the lower 3D conflicting with, you know, DoD radar. We kind of had that already with, you know, the FCC and the FAA, you know, certain 5G spots around major airports had, you know, couldn't be, you know, turned on until a certain date. Did you, you know, either during your time or, you know, what you're doing now, do you run into a lot of resistance from other government entities? You know, I'm assuming you do with what you're doing, and everyone's kind of everyone wants to hold on to what they already have. So
there is no cost that? There's no cost for the federal agency to hold on to spectrum. I advocated for a budgetary cost to them. There is nothing today, and so they fight with vigor. Do we have a lot of instances? FAA, DOT, DOD. I mean, NOAA, NASA. Name the agency who has spectrum that we didn't fight with. To try and make it more efficient, to try and address their real needs, to try and minimize what they were using. Those are constant fights. And, you know, part of the problem is the process is broken down for those agencies. There's, you know, it's intended that they would go through the Department of Commerce at NTIA to resolve their concerns, and the NTIA would be the spokesman for them. And instead, the agencies have run to Capitol Hill, they've made power plays in campaigns, they've threatened to, you know, the lives of people on planes. As it relates to the DOT. So there are a lot of federal agencies that have had some questionable behavior try and hold on to spectrum bands that they shouldn't have. And we worked through all those issues, the issues at C-band with the FAA. We're working through those issues, should have been done a long time ago. They're really mostly, there really isn't an issue there. Mostly altimeters proven not to be a problem. I mean, it was an overblown situation that should never have have caused any problems, but we are where we are and we have to live through that. That's why I say early on, that's why 12 gigahertz makes, it is even a better position, because there is no federal agencies to have to fight with, like lower 3 gigahertz or like at 7, or 8. There's other, those have federal agencies in there who will, desperately try and protect their position.
It's a little easier to more or less fight against, incumbent private organizations than it is the government or other.
Well, you can fight on the science. You can fight on, the studies and the projections and the engineering versus, having, a 4-star general go into Capitol Hill and say, this is something critical for my purpose. I can't tell you anything about it because it's all secret. It's all classified, national security reasons. And look, I've been in those situations when in my past life, and members, of the Senate and the House were duly concerned about what spectrum bands are being used for national security. And so they would slow down and be mindful of what it could be for DOD. So rightfully so, but then it became such a paralyzing situation that DOD could always just threaten the circumstances and slow down national progress on spectrum policy.
Well, it kind of speaks to how politics and influence and also creating a narrative influences a lot of these things more so than science. For instance, the altimeter thing with the 5G impacting airplanes, all the airplanes are going to crash if we don't do this, and sort of the hijinks around that, which made us all think, why did we not solve this problem, a long time ago? But again, that's something where that got into the national news, that got people talking. And it's funny the things that do come up. So I guess part of what drives a lot of that is Capitol Hill and what, our lawmakers are saying and talking to their constituents about. What is the appetite and the interest and the level of, knowledge generally on Capitol Hill around some of these issues in your, experience in dealing with lawmakers?
It depends on the committees of jurisdiction, which I mainly worked for and with. They tend to know the policy quite well. When you had trouble was when members were off committee and were making pitches for particular agencies. We had NOAA and NASA for some of the higher bands that, 24, 26, 28 kind of fight. They were threatening, without, addressing NOAA and NASA's concerns, we would have no climate information and we'd head into, all the big problems with climate change and what could come from that. And the world would be, no meteorites, no weather predictions could happen, and the world would crash and burn for those reasons. And it all turned out to be not true, just like the experience in C-band and the altimeter situation. Things were overblown, never should have come to the light, but they would get attention of the committees of jurisdiction that they were closer with, House Science Committee, for instance, people who weren't as knowledgeable about the subject matter of spectrum. But I think both House Energy and Commerce, which I worked for, and the Senate Commerce Committee, which I worked with members on, and they're quite knowledgeable. They're working on spectrum legislation right now. They've been trying to figure out how to deal with spectrum, auction authority and the extension of that authority, which hopefully will occur. The people talk about 18 months. I think that makes a lot of sense. And so I think they're knowledgeable about the topic. And then you get off committee and the knowledge base goes downhill quite quick.
That's fair. That's fair. Well, Mike, we certainly appreciate it. And we appreciate you being a proponent for the 5G for 12 gigahertz coalition and opening up the 12 gigahertz band for two-way use and 5G services. And we'll get you out of here on this. Obviously, you spend a lot of time on Capitol Hill, a lot of time in D.C. Do you have a restaurant recommendation in D.C. that you love to go to again and again?
That sounds funny. I've moved to the suburbs since my early days. I got married, had kids. My recommendation right now is our local diner, Metro 29, right down the street. That's where my kids love. And that actually, if I can make my kids happy, that's the key to my life.
That's a win.
There you go. Well, Mike, we certainly appreciate the time. It's been super knowledgeable. Great to speak to somebody who's been, a member of the FCC and like I said, very knowledgeable and absolutely loved it. Thank you.
Thank you. Much, much appreciated. Happy to be back sometime.
Thanks, Mike. Awesome. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a good one.
Have a good one.
That was Mike O'Reilly, former FCC commissioner, 2013 to 2020. We really appreciate his time. I don't know about you, John, but I learned a lot.
I learned a ton, and I'm just really thankful that he took the time to join us and drop some knowledge. I mean, a lot of really great perspectives from his vantage point at the FCC, and I think really educational as we seek to better understand what's really going on out here and all the different angles that are in play. As we look at it and say, we need this now, what's holding it up? Oh man, all these things. And he spoke to that really well.
It is the government, right? It's not a quick process, but it's good to know that the gears are grinding, the gears are moving, right? And we're making progress towards that. So as always, hey, follow us on Apple Podcasts, follow us on Spotify, Audible, YouTube. Go ahead and, you know, subscribe to us on YouTube if you want to see our wonderful faces do this podcast. We appreciate all of you listening. Yeah, looking forward to doing this again, John.
Looking forward to another one soon. And thanks, Andy, for making this happen. And
yeah, if you want to talk about 5G, if you want to talk about broadband, you know, give us a shout. We'd love to have you on.
Absolutely.
All right, you're now logged off, Andy and John Talk Telecom.
Bye.